Hey everyone, I'm excited to bring to you Ryan Hall, who is a fellow accomplishment coaching coach, graduate. And I was just on his podcast not too long ago, and we had a really good time. Ryan is a life and relationship coach, and he's also the author of multiple books. And we actually have a book that we're co-creating together along with many, many other amazing writers as well. But yeah, I'm really excited. Oh, and you have your own podcast as well called the Soul R Powered, the podcast with Ryan Hall. Yeah, well, I'm really excited to have you here, Ryan.
No, my pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation. You are on, and actually it's the Solar Powered Podcast.
So funny. I was like, wait, am I missing something?
I'm like, bro, you were on the show just a couple weeks ago. Come on.
Okay. Oh my God. That's so funny. I was like, so confused. I was like, wait, did he like change the name of his podcast? Like what? I don't know.
It just has a cute spelling. What can I say?
That's hilarious. Way to kick it off.
I do what I can, my friend. I do what I can.
Typical Davidson fashion. Yeah. that's funny. Well, either way, I'm excited to have you here. And, I'll always remember, I think it was like during our program and even afterwards, like you'd always come visit and you're always so supportive of us and like just your energy. Like you can tell that you're very like spiritually connected to accomplishment coaching. And yeah, you just want what's best for us. So that was really touching. I think each graduate, when they come back, there's something that, you know, they add to, each of us add to each of the observation. So it's pretty cool to see that energy and how, you know, we all like really support each other and we're always, you know, like supporting each other's like projects and endeavors. So I really appreciate you.
Yeah, well, my pleasure. And you know, one thing that I've noticed is that I've been removed for accomplishment coaching. I was actually a year after, I was in the class after you. But one thing, and I've been removed for a few years now, but one thing that I notice is just every time I'm able to get into an observation to visit, and with the pandemic being in full swing, they don't have open observations at the moment, but I'm dying to get back once that actually gets lifted.
Yeah.
But the thing that I notice is that all of the classes just have such a different energy.
Hmm.
They really have a different energy. Like our energy, my class's energy was totally different from your classes. And then the team after you came around had a bit of a different energy. So, you know, it's really beautiful to me to be able to see just how like different the energies are, how different the personalities are in that room.
Yeah. Well, how would you describe, like, what was your group like, I guess? I'm sure we could talk about that for like,
we can definitely talk about that for a while, but without really getting into, you know, without breaking confidentiality too much, we were very lovey-dovey. Like we were very, you know, we were very connected, very you know, it was a very, very kind of a soulful, you know, kind of a soulful class. But it was a very kind of heart-centered, soulful class.
That's awesome. I mean, that's a good thing. I mean,
yeah.
I think the biggest takeaway that I got from accomplishment coaching was just like loving, like that I had love in my life and that love is abundant and everywhere, you know, and it was all around, but I just didn't see it. Like after accomplishment coaching, I was like, oh, it was with me all along.
It's been there the whole time. Exactly.
Yeah, no,
that was kind of like me. Like I remember after weekend one, and it's a 12-month program, but yeah, after weekend one, like the very first thought that I had, like the biggest takeaway that I had there was, I think for the first time really in my adult life, I belonged. Like, I belong to something greater. I belong to something more powerful, because here I was, a guy from Alabama coming in, meeting people from all over, you know, all over the Western Hemisphere. Like, there was somebody in our class from the Cayman Islands. But, you know, there was a, you know, it was definitely an interesting, like, mix up of people that I just fit into like a glove. That I just really fit into like a glove, and I really have ever since.
Is it Jonae? Was that who was? Was it Jonae, the one from the Cayman Islands?
Ian.
Yeah?
Yeah, Ian Chowdhury.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, because so we had someone from the Bahamas in our group, so I think.
Okay.
I
got you. Yeah, no, Ian's actually a fellow. Actually contributed a chapter to this book project that we're both working on. So
awesome.
And still, you know, even though I haven't seen him, he's still one of my best friends to this day.
Yeah, it is magical when you have, because I do think, you know, we have different chapters in our lives, but I would say accomplishment coaching has been the consistent over the last 3 or 4 years that I've been consistently keeping in touch with, right? I do think, you know, some of my college friends and high school friends, like, yeah, definitely don't keep in touch with them as often. Yeah.
But the crazy thing for me is that since I went through that class, I have reconnected with people that I knew from elementary school and from high school, mm-hmm. because I was able to get better connected with myself.
Yeah, that's a good point. Likewise, I've hosted like a lot of reunions. Like, I think I've hosted like 10 reunions since the program. It helped me realize like, oh, okay, this is kind of like my superpower to like bring people together.
Yeah. Exactly. And your listeners may be wondering, my co-host for my own podcast is back in the background there. He's a four-legged co-host that doesn't actually speak except when spoken to, if you know what I mean.
Aw. What's her name or his or her name?
That's Pete.
Pete.
Yeah, Pete is a, he is part bulldog, part lab, and I think part Muppet.
Ah. Nice. Oh, cool. Would love to, I mean, I'm curious about your podcast. Like, what would you say are some of the biggest takeaways you've gotten from doing the podcast, and especially with your new project, your new series of like, you know, connecting with a lot of the fellow authors? I always feel like I've gotten like a lot out of the pot, you know, doing my podcast.
Biggest thing that I've taken away, and like I said, it's called Solar Powered, and it's really, it's a play on my name. Soul-R, but it's a play on my name, and what it is, it's sharing stories, be it my personal stories or stories from people that I connect with, people that I'm associated with this book project, or, you know, people in life, really, people who have powerful stories that can help people listening to be able to get better connected with their soul and their higher purpose, and just really, really helping them find their place in the world on a deeper level instead of the superficial kind of pedal to the metal craziness that a lot of us have.
I'm curious, like, what does soul mean to you?
Soul is, first of all, soul is something that I've always associated with. Soul is one of my essence words. But what soul means to me is somebody who is living their truth. And by that, I mean, we are all versions. We are all bigger adult versions of who we were as kids. Like, what really lit you up when you were 10 years old? for me, it was, you know, it was storytelling and writing. But it's all about, I would say, like really embodying who we were as a, like who we were as a child, really who we were as that smaller, human, and imparting kind of the knowledge and the wisdom that we have as adults and the, you know, in the higher intellect and whatnot, because that's who we really are at our heart, is that, you know, is that little 10-year-old child or 7-year-old or whatever it is you associate with, but it's somebody, but that's where our passion, that's where our love, that's where our, you know, creativity really comes from. And to answer your question, that is what living a soul-centered life really means to me, is just having that, like having that deeper spiritual connection with who I was at 12 years old. Mm-hmm. But still being able to impart the wisdom and the intellect that I have as an adult.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think somewhere along the way, you know, whether it's our parents or just people say stuff and then you get altered and you're like, I know for me, I've had a couple mentors that were like, yeah, don't play video games. Like, that's for losers. Like, adults don't play video games. And I remember that like ripped apart my world, because I was so into like fantasy and imagination and like the magical realm of, you know, like the curiosity of just like exploration. And I remember from that day on, when he told me that, I like stopped playing video games, and it was like a big part of my joy, like just got sucked out of my life. I remember.
Yeah. Wow. You know, something that I hear in that is just with me, when I was a kid, when I was like elementary school age, I was really fascinated with space travel, like really fascinated with NASA and the space shuttle. And I think a lot of it started when the Challenger explosion happened.
Mm, yeah.
Because I mean, I was in third grade and I saw it happen on TV that morning.
Huh.
But I just got really fascinated by it. And a few weeks ago, and you know, that's kind of waned over the years, but a few weeks ago when SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, launched the astronauts up to the space station, I was watching that webcast I was just like a child again, just seeing this is so cool to be able to, I guess, strap into a rocket and be able to shoot up, you know, 250 miles up into the sky to be able to do that. And it was just such a cool moment. And I've really been reading up and like educating myself a lot on space history. I've got a, you know, I'm kind of working, kind of massaging an idea for a new writing project around that. But that, you know, it's really gotten me like reconnected with that part of who I was as a child. So I really hear you on that, because when we let go of those, what we see as those childish pursuits, first of all, that's silly. But second of all, it really, I think, takes away from who we are at our truth.
Yeah, I'm, it's interesting you mentioned the space thing, because I used to be really into that as well. And I think, yeah, with Elon, you know, I've been more recently, I think one of the best books I've read is Endurance by Scott Kelly, the guy that, are you familiar with him?
I am, yes.
Yeah, he's such a, like, such a good storyteller, and such, that book, like, so good. But yeah, I think, like, we lose a sense of our childhood, a lot of us, you know, because I think sometimes we feel like we have to like grow up or we have to conform to society.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, right. But it's crazy how like some people's words can really have such a big impact in our lives, right? It's like sometimes you're like, man, I can't believe like that I had to, you know, I felt like I had to listen, right? It's like weird how that works.
Yeah, it really is. You know, funny you should mention that. A couple weeks ago, I had just gotten off with a with my gotten off of a session with my therapist that just really wrecked me, right? And I needed to decompress. And I saw a video online on YouTube from Chris Hadfield, who also another astronaut.
Yeah.
The one who covered the David Bowie song Space Oddity while up on the space station. But he shared a story in a TED talk that just really got me thinking. He was out on a spacewalk. Now, you know, when you're on a spacewalk, you've got to wear the, you know, the airtight suit and the big cumbersome helmet to keep you, keep your blood from boiling.
Yeah.
And he, when he was out on the spacewalk, his eyes just got terribly irritated. Like he couldn't see. Like he had tears bubbling up in his eyes, but they had nowhere to go because no gravity.
Right.
Turns out he was allergic to whatever they sprayed inside of his helmet to keep it from fogging up.
Oh, wow.
But, which they did not use for his second spacewalk, obviously. They cleaned it up. But the question that he, like the question that he posed during this TED talk just really kind of changed my perspective on a lot of things. The question was, is what you're afraid of actually dangerous? Hmm. He really had no danger when he was out on that, when he was out on that spacewalk. I mean, you know, it's inconvenient that he had to cut it off early because he couldn't see and had to go back inside the spacecraft and, you know, get medical attention. But it wasn't dangerous, unlike the ride that he took up to the space station on the back of that big rocket.
Right.
Which is dangerous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's, you know, it's really kind of a fascinating thing to really kind of take a look at that mindset.
Yeah, I think there's so many things that like we're afraid of that is actually not as bad as we think it is. You know, it's like sometimes it's irrational. I mean, even like for me, I have a pretty big fear of heights. And I remember like even going to the Willis Tower in Chicago. And I remember like I couldn't even look down. Like I was like I was so scared. And I mean, I get it, because like I guess theoretically, if the glass shattered, I'd be screwed. But like, there's been millions of people that have gone through that, and like it has never shattered before, right? But I just remember like shitting my pants, and I was so afraid, and I was like, oh my god, this is crazy, like so scared. But yeah, my human mind is fascinating. Yeah.
It is. And I think that's what has really, I think that's what's really gotten me so curious as, you know, not just a human being, but as a fellow coach as well, just to be able to take a look inside that human mind, inside that primate mind, and just to kind of see what makes it tick.
Yeah. Yeah. We are certainly primates. Like the amount of fight responses I've seen in my life, I'm just like, really? Like, really? Like, sometimes, I mean, obviously, like, I was like that too. And I still am, right, at certain, like, aspects. But at least I feel like I have a little bit more awareness. I'm like, why am I, like, so triggered right now? Like, what's going on, you know? But, yeah, sometimes I'm just like,
no, I would know absolutely nothing about that.
I mean, this is like a pretty loaded question, but maybe what are like some of the top, like one or two takeaways you've gotten recently just from coaching others? Because I do think what shows up in others, at least, you know, for me with my coaching clients, it's like the same stuff that I've dealt with really recently or like that I'm currently dealing with now.
Yeah. Well, without getting too specific, obviously, because of confidentiality, it's just like you said, with some of the people that I work with, some of the guys that I work with, a lot of the same fears that they have about their own and like with their own insecurities about who they are, about, you know, not being enough, not being smart enough or talented enough. a lot of those same insecurities and a lot of those same fears show up in my clients as they do with me.
Yeah.
You know, because these are fears that I have and that I have had since, you know, time immemorial, because I think that, you know, I think that's why these clients end up getting attracted to me, is because they can kind of, you know, it's like almost like an energetic thing. It's like they can tell that that I have overcome or am in process on some of those exact same fears that keep them stopped in their own projects and in their own lives.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting how we attract like very similar minded like people, right? Like I definitely notice like a lot of my clients go through this like insecurity part where like people don't see, like they don't see the greatness in themselves sometimes, right? And then it's sometimes like we seek, like me and my clients seek that external validation where it's like we only realize we're awesome because someone else said it, right? It's like whether it's like our manager or significant other, like it's always like, it's like, oh yeah, now I see it. It's like, it's kind of crazy like how that
works. No, it really is. Like I just picked up a new client this past week who, you know, as we were on our initial conversation, I'm looking and talking to this guy and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is me from like 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, when you see somebody who has the kind of just powerhouse potential that somebody has that they just can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I really resonate with that because like I've always had it. I just couldn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. It's an interesting topic. And then, oh yeah. And you did Landmark too at one point, right?
Yeah, no, I am a fellow Landmartian. I did the forum, did the advanced course, did 2 or 3 seminars. So yeah, no, it's I'm well aware of that culture as well.
What would you say was like the biggest takeaway from like just being involved with Landmark?
Well, 2 things are coming up. First of all, community.
Hmm.
Because, you know, and that's really especially with the, like the seminars that I did, is you're always split up into smaller kind of focus groups.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those people who, and I haven't done anything with them in a couple of years now, but a lot of those people are still good friends of mine to this day, because you were able to bond over the course of the 10 weeks of this program.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest takeaway that I had was, and this is something that I still deal with, but the biggest takeaway that I had from doing Landmark, from doing the forum especially, was so much of our lives are not, so much of our lives is a response.
Hmm.
So much of our lives is a response to circumstances, to the people in your lives. We're not responding to the, we're responding to how we see the way that they're treating us, if that makes sense. Like we're responding to that through our own filters and through our own context, instead of actually not making this about us, because we're all, you know, we all make everything mean whatever it's supposed to mean, or whatever we want it to mean, rather.
Yeah. The filters was a really big, like the always listening from a filter was always like big for me. So I remember like after one of the communication courses, I was like, damn, I'm always listening to my mother from this filter, you know, or always listening to my fiance from this filter, you know, and it's not the most flattering filter, quite to be honest, right? So
right, no, it's a filter that lives inside this big dome that lives on our shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, another thing that I wanted to share with that is that I think so many of us, but just speaking for myself here, but so many of us are resistant to transformation, to change, to actually living a bigger, bolder life. Our resistances are just so high.
Yeah.
Like, I want to say it was the middle of day two, like maybe towards the end of day two of the forum. Like for the first day and a half, I was just like my wall. I mean, it was just like the great wall of, you know, the great wall of block, like a giant block wall, because I wasn't hearing anything. I wasn't really getting it.
Yeah.
But I was also developing a knot at the base of my neck that grew to the size of a lime.
Wow.
Like I was really wanting to crawl out of my skin.
Wow.
But then something happened. We did an exercise sort of towards the end of that day that just sort of dropped my, dropped my wall. And, you know, just to borrow a phrase of a mutual friend of ours, Mr. Jason Dukes, it's like that was the day that my forum actually started. That was when my forum actually started, was when I actually dropped that wall and actually was able to absorb what was going on in the room, kind of energetically absorb what was going on in the room instead of resisting it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense because I think change can be like scary, right? And it can be uncomfortable and, you know, I mean, especially a landmark, like I feel like it can be quite intense, right? Especially if you've never done anything like that before. Like sometimes I've paid for a couple of my mentees and they couldn't even make it through it because it was just too much for them. So, you know, that happens a lot. Actually.
And they are long, intense days.
Yeah.
You were going to feel road hard and put up wet once you're done with that.
Yeah, it's a lot, but I mean, I love it though. Like I'm like a sucker for these things. Like I'm always like crying and like, I love it. Yeah, kind of switching gears a little bit, but I'm curious as to like, what made you want to become a writer? Like, were you always writing even as a child?
I love this story. No, my writing, I've always been a storyteller. Like I've always been a storyteller dating back to when I was, you know, real small. I've always been a storyteller. But when it comes to like finding my voice as a writer, my grandfather, I give a huge credit for on this. Now my grandfather has been gone for close to 30 years now, died in 1992. Got 28 years. Wow. But he, just a little bit about him for your audience. He was a veteran. He was a veteran of the South Pacific, got a Purple Heart, took a bullet in the left bicep, which kind of left his left hand pretty, you know, didn't have much use out of it for most of his adult life. Probably, you know, 20 or 30% use out of it. But when he came back, you know, he became very successful in farming, in real estate, all with a fifth grade education.
Wow.
Okay. Now keep in mind, he was also born back in 1917. So there's a, you know, so his childhood in the 20s was a lot different.
Right.
Especially his childhood in rural Alabama was a lot different.
Right.
But my grandfather, you know, I love telling the story. It was one night when I was like the summer I was 10. It was like middle of July, hot as hell. but like one of those like really oppressive humid heats that we don't get up here in the north. I mean, this is rural Alabama. Let's keep it real here. But my grandfather was a big time peanut farmer. Huh. Had like rows and rows of peanuts, won awards for this, right? Wow. That was one of the things that he did best. Met President Reagan one time.
Wow.
Because of some innovations that he made while he was a national farm of distinction or something like that. I honestly can't remember. But one of his irrigation rigs, like one of those like really long irrigation rigs, probably run like 20 yards or something like that, wasn't working. He had a patch of peanuts that was just going dead and he couldn't figure out why. And they were on a timer. And he rode over there. It was set to go on at like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And this was during the summer. We were down visiting. And he invited me over. I'm like, of course. I mean, I worship this man. I mean, he's still one of my greatest heroes. Mm. But there were a ton that night as we were waiting for the irrigation rig to come on. There were a ton of lightning bugs, a ton of fireflies out that night. Mm. And this man had me so convinced that these lightning bugs were this race of alien monkeys that had come down to sabotage irrigation equipment, that I was just riveted by the story. I had to turn it into something. Wow. So it's like I dedicated my first book to him, from Monkey Town to Written in the Stone. So, but yeah, no, that's how I became a writer, just because I needed to turn that into, like, I had that energy and I needed to turn it into something. And my mom was a huge help on that. And yeah, and what I wouldn't give to be able to put my hands on that copy right now.
Huh. That's really cool. Yeah. It's awesome how like one person can influence like so many lives, you know. That's always touching for me. One of the most beautiful things is I guess like when you go to like a funeral, you know, you really feel the energy and like how many lives that one person has touched, you know. Like for me, it's always like a very grounding, very like spiritual energy that happens like during a funeral, because you really get to see like the impact that this one person has had, and you know, thousands or hundreds, and just so many lives. And for me, it's like always like a beautiful thing, like just to kind of like take a step back and think about how many people, like even you, have influenced, right? It's like I don't know, like I feel like sometimes I can cry just like thinking about something like that, you know.
Get it. I really get that. And influence, legacy, that's a huge thing with me, just as, you know, just personally, just to be able to, you know, just to be able to know that when my number is called, that I can leave something on this planet that people can, you know, that you can really leave something on this planet that people can really be with 100, 200 years from now.
Mm.
Even when my body is long gone, my impact on the world is still there.
Mm. And that makes sense why writing, right? Because writing, I feel like, is the most timeless thing, right? I mean, I read stuff from like, God knows how long they've passed away, you know? So I think it's beautiful, yeah, when you read like stuff and yeah.
Yeah, but if you think about it like this, I think this is a Stephen Covey principle. It's like the circles of influence.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, who you're being to your circle affects the entire world. Because if you impact one person, that one person can impact everybody they know and everybody they know until the entire world is impacted. That's why your voice is so important in this world, because you don't know what kind of impact you're going to leave on somebody again when you're long gone.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Like even with your podcast, like I love how like you can see the stats, and then sometimes you see like the listeners from India or Alaska or like Russia or like the Philippines, and sometimes you're like, wow, like that's so cool. Like it's always like a weird feeling when you see like how global your content is, right?
Exactly. Like one of my, I'm also a regular contributor to the Good Men Project. And I will never forget this one email that I got from a reader in India. Like you don't realize just how, like how global your reach is until you get that reflected back in you.
Yeah, I think I remember you saying for some reason you get a lot of readers from India, right?
I do, and I've gotten more since that first one. But yeah, no, it's quite interesting to to really think of that kind of impact.
Yeah. And I think that's what's cool about your your podcast, your blogs, your because it's like a lot of times it's like sometimes years and years later, right? When impact, it's like so weird how that happens.
That's the craziest thing. Like I remember getting an email maybe, 2 or 3 months ago based off of something that I wrote 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's like mind-boggling. It's like,
It really is. It really is.
that's awesome. So, and it sounds like you like writing fiction as well. Would love to learn about your creative process on how to go about that, because I'm sure it's a completely different process than maybe writing nonfiction, right? Or yeah, would love to hear about that.
Yeah, no, when it comes to writing fiction, I always start with the character. Like my characters and like character voices are one thing that I probably do better than anything as a fiction writer. Because I don't start m like macro like that. Like, here's the story that I want to tell. Let's create a character around that story. I create the character and I create the story that I want to tell about this character. So I kind of start from the inside out like that, but it really works for me. It might not work for anybody else, but it really works for me. My process is my own. Somebody else's process is going to be completely different.
That's really cool. So you really have the depth like of the character, like really like, and then is the character often you? Like is it like, or is it completely something different than you?
A lot of times it's based on me. A lot of times it's based on me, like the, like my protagonist in my novel that's in print right now. It's very much based on me. Now, granted, I've never been to a few of these places, to any of these places that I talk about in the book, well, exception of one town, small town in Alabama, that's completely fictionalized version of a place that actually exists. But I've never been to London. I wasn't held hostage in the Middle East. But a lot of the mannerisms and a lot of the voice and a lot of the, just sort of the motivations of the character are based on me.
Yeah, I often hear that's like the best novels are like that, right? Because then you can bring something more tangible and it's more relatable versus like if you haven't experienced, I mean, obviously, like the more crazy stuff you haven't experienced, right? But even at the core, right? I think it has to be like you, right?
Write what you know.
And then what about your non-fiction writing process? Like, how does that look like typically?
Really based off of a story that I want to tell. I mean, even my nonfiction, even, stuff for the Good Men Project, the stuff for this, for the Great Pause, the collab that we're both working on. Even my nonfiction, it's based off of a story, based off of the story that I want to tell, but also, especially when when I write for something like the Good Men Project, it's something that I want, it's like a lesson that I want to leave. it's like a particular like coaching concept or personal transformation concept that the story that I have can leave on the reader and leave on the audience.
So there's always, and then how do you structure it, right? Because I think sometimes like people have a lot of these ideas, but they are kind of almost like afraid of like being judged maybe, or maybe like they're afraid to like put themselves out there. Because I know a lot of people that write and it's like, and then just, it's just for them. Like they, like even people that have created like elaborate like fiction books and still haven't been able to like publish it for some odd reason.
It's an excellent question. The way that I approach that is that I'm writing for an audience of one. Because if I'm writing for a publisher, or if I'm writing for an agent or whomever, if I'm writing for somebody else, that's not me. That's not my words on the page. I mean, it may be my words, but it's not my heart that's on the page. And when I'm writing for the audience of one, you know, sometimes, you know, my sense of humor is very dry. So sometimes I may be the only one that actually gets the joke, and somebody might read it like, what the hell is that? But when you're writing for the audience of one, that is, you know, that is when you can put your most, your biggest passion and your truth. That's when your truth actually goes on the page, is when you're writing for the audience of one. Because like I said, if you're writing for an audience, inauthentic is an understatement.
Yeah, that's a good lesson, actually. There's been many times where I'm trying to write, you know what I mean? Like trying to, and it's like almost like comes off as like trying too hard, right? It's like inauthentic. Exactly. Yeah, authentic, right? You can tell, like the stuff where I write, where it's like, I get like a ton of feedback, like positive feedback. I'm like, it's like way different. It's like being vulnerable. I notice it's like a big thing, right? It's like authentic, where it's like relatable, and then it's like people like the hero's journey, right? It's like man, like that sucks, you know? Like I feel like that always resonates, I feel like, at least what I've noticed. Yeah.
And one of the thing, and as you were saying that, if you're writing for an audience of one, sometimes your writing is going to suck. Is going to absolutely suck. But sometimes pieces like that, I don't want to even name names here, but sometimes pieces like that, when you're writing for an audience of one, can be massive bestsellers, can be absolutely massive bestsellers. And all I'm going to say is usually these involve the main characters as a vampire somehow. But I mean, these can be just massive bestsellers, but these, you know, when you're writing for an audience of one, you know, when your audience reads that and it really resonates, that's when it's going to take off. Finding that audience is a challenge in and of itself, right? But when your audience is able to find that, that is when it's going to take off.
Yeah, that's good advice. I could definitely learn it. Like it's like in theory, like it makes sense, but sometimes it's hard to not think about like, oh, you know, like I think this will you know, get a lot of likes, you know what I mean? Like on Facebook, you're like, I don't know. I think sometimes like I get caught up with like, oh yeah, like I think so-and-so will like this, you know? But then like, I don't know. For me, it's hard. Like sometimes like I do that, and then sometimes I filter it back. Like I write it and then like I take it back. I'm like, oh no, this might be too raw for people. You know, I don't know. Like I always feel like kind of weird when I write things that I'm like, this might be too much information.
Yeah, sometimes raw and messy is going to be the thing that just really, like, really lands for somebody.
Yeah.
Might not be polished. It might not be flowery or floral or anything like that, but that may be when it really, you know, when it really just, you know, when somebody can really sink their teeth into something.
Yeah, I guess I still have ways to go. Sometimes I write stuff and I'm like, this is too crazy. Like, people are going to just shit out of me. You know?
No. Don't even start with that.
But,
I'm loving how this is going so far. So
yeah.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Well, I'm curious actually, like, the topic of the Great Pause, like what you wrote about. I'm actually really excited to read yours because, you know, you're definitely much more of an advanced writer than I am and most people that I know. So I'm curious as to, like, your style and, like, not necessarily the content, but, like, how you structure, like, your writing and stuff like that.
Got it. Well, my topic, my theme of my chapter in The Great Pause is about Phoenix rising. You know, rising from the ashes is really what I base a lot of my coaching practice around, is just rising from the ashes of the world. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of give you the bullet points, I'm living in a hotel right now.
Oh, right.
And I was kicked out. My dog and I were kicked out of the place where we were living, like, about a week before everything just really hit hard.
Oh, man.
So it was a lot of, you know, a lot of doomsday kind of stuff with my former landlord. I thought he was crazy, but he still might be. But it was a lot of doomsday stuff around that. Like, I started getting some kind of mysterious text messages around him. It's like, and you know, admittedly, I had lost my job earlier this year. Something that I go into with pretty great detail in my in my chapter, but I was in a really dark place around that, like a really dark place around that, and I had fallen behind on rent a little bit. I didn't owe a ton of money, but I did owe some money. But I started getting these mysterious text messages from my landlord. Hey, you're going to be able to get caught up. If you can't get caught up, then maybe it's a good time for you and Pete to find other arrangements, something like that. Huh. And then one morning, it was a Wednesday morning, I'll never forget this. One morning, I get this text message from him, essentially that I was out, that I had to find something. I was given $1,100 cash. I was forgiven the money that I actually owed. Huh. He just wanted me gone. He wanted all of his tenants gone. Because I rented a room from the guy's house.
Huh.
Yeah, I rented a room from the guy's house. Like, the only tenant I think that he still has left is his elderly uncle, who I think would love to leave if he could. But he's got some, I think he's got some health stuff that's still going on. Lovely guy, by the way. Told me that he actually had drinks with Andre the Giant one time, but that's neither here nor there. You know, it's really about just bouncing, you know, getting back on the horse, even when you find yourself in one of the worst depressions you've ever experienced, but getting back on the horse, finding a full-time job that's, I have faith that's going to start once they allow third-party vendors back into Best Buy. You know, finding a full-time job, building your business, being able to contribute to this incredible new book, but doing all this during a global pandemic when you're in the depths of one of the worst depressions you've ever had.
Yeah, that's a fitting Phoenix rising. I like that. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's a lot. But, you know, I think it's cool that you're able to see, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, you're still optimistic and you're able to see, like, the light at the end of the tunnel. And It has been tough, you know. I've been, I would say I'm lying. I've been almost like inauthentic about like my struggles with COVID as well. You know, like I think sometimes I try to portray like it's like nice and bright and shiny, but you know, inside it's like the walls are burning. You know, it's like burning down. You know what I mean? It's like.
I mean, yeah, and oh, do I get that? Like, well, I wasn't close to the man. I did know somebody who passed away. One of my best friends lost his dad because of COVID-19. And my sister, back in Alabama, is a assistant GM at a Walgreens back home, and she went through radiation and chemo last year for stage 3 throat cancer, which thank God she has beaten. But still, radiation and chemo and being a cancer patient lowers your immune system. So, like during the heart of this, I had just been worried sick that something was going to happen to her. And, you know, she's 1,000 miles away. So it's been, you know, it's been a heavy experience. And you know, something that a lot of people might not know, and that I do talk about in the Great Pause, is that the day that everything shut down, all the sports, the theater, everything like that, was March 12th. I'll never forget that day because that is my birthday. So everything from, you know, from baseball to basketball, hockey, everything shut down on my 43rd birthday.
Yeah, I remember.
Happy freaking birthday, right?
Damn, yeah, dude, that sucks. Yeah.
But I think what I want to leave with the readers of this book, which I am insanely excited to get out into the world, but what I want to leave with the readers of this book is that while your circumstances may suck, just suck so hard, but your circumstances may suck, but you still have a chance. You still have a chance to get through it. If your heart is still beating, if you can still draw breath with your lungs, which is not a guaranteed right now, but if you can still draw breath, if your brain still works, you still have a chance to make something beautiful with your life. And it's like you said really eloquently on my podcast, is that it really taught you just what it, you know, it really taught me just what's important to me, you know, not the, you know, the successes and anything like that, but it's the relationships that I have formed. It's the, you know, just the deepening relationship with myself and with my own inner child has, you know, really been a beautiful after effect with from this. And you know, just sometimes you got to remember just to press pause and ask for help. Never killed anybody.
I love that. Thanks, Ryan. It's been an awesome conversation. We always have good laughs,
My
and
pleasure.
I feel like, yeah, like who you're being for the world, and just like, you know, like you sharing, being vulnerable about your healing process, and also helping men be able to be okay with just like being raw and authentic and vulnerable. And just like, yeah, I love how, because I think writing is one of those things that a lot of people want to do, but they're afraid of. And I think, you know, the more you put yourself out there, and the more you show by example, the more it's possible for, even for me, I'm like thinking about like, oh, I want to, then tomorrow and today, the rest of today, I want to write some fiction, because I, it was like always something that I wanted to do, but I was always just like afraid of doing it. But I, you know, I think it'll just be fun just to play, you know, see what happens. So thanks, Ryan. I really appreciate you, and really appreciate you having me on your podcast as well. It's been a lot of fun, and can't wait to read your chapter. Yeah, it's gonna be cool. Would love to chat about it with you afterwards as well.
No, my pleasure. And you know, this has been a real thrill for me, man. And you know, if there's one quick thing that I could leave with your listeners, it's just when it comes to big transformations in your life, to, you know, to being more vulnerable, to being more open and honest with yourself, it's not a light switch. It's not something that you can just, that you can just flip on. This is a constant, it's a process. It's a process. It's like one of my coaching heroes is Nick Saban, the head coach at for University of Alabama football. And he talks about the process all the time. It's about not simply being a winner on the field, but it's about being a winner in life. Being the best for your community, being the best for, your family, for, for your school. And I think that's the, but sometimes that's not going to be, it's not going to look polished and perfect. But I think it's I think it's something that we can really all step into and just start before you're ready.
Yeah, it's certainly a journey, and I like the Phoenix analogy, right? Because a lot of times, like, it's hard to really think, like, especially when you're in, when there's a pile of dust or ash, it's hard to think like something beautiful can come from that, right? But then looking back at it, like, in hindsight, you're always like, wow, like that moment was actually one of the most influential moments of my life, and one of the most, it's like a tipping point. So,
Exactly.
yeah. Well, thank you so much, Ryan.
My
And
pleasure. Thank you for having me.
yeah, can't wait to see you in person.
Yeah,
Maybe.
no doubt. Yeah, I can't wait to see a lot of people in person.
Yeah. Have a good 4th of July tomorrow.
I sure will. You as well, my friend. And again, thank you so much for having me on.